Welcome to Tech San Diego's Spotlight Podcast. I'm Kevin Carroll, Executive Director of Tech San Diego, coming to you from our super secret, temporary global headquarters in sunny Rancho Penasquitos in San Diego. Technology's perfect climate. So it seems like everything we're talking about and everything that's kind of, it's kind of permeated all of our discussions is talent acquisition. And so I've been looking forward to this podcast because it's a little different take. We've talked about immigration in the past, but it's really been almost a political discussion about what's happening and what's going on, what's the status, how can we predict what's going on. But I think now we have a chance to look at immigration under a very different lens, and that's the lens of talent acquisition. And so that's how we're going to frame this discussion. And so to help us is Lauren Ross. Lauren is a senior associate at Fragelman San Diego office. Lauren, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Kevin.
So a little bit about Lauren, if those of you who are not familiar with her, she focuses on structuring and managing permanent residence programs for clients. She also advises clients on non-immigrant and immigrant strategy, naturalization, citizenship matters, travel, consular issues, I-9 compliance, and everything else immigration. And also, the San Diego office is the best Fragelman office, right, Lauren?
Well, I'm a little bit biased, but I think so.
Fantastic. And so, Lauren, thanks for coming on. In the intro, I talked a little bit about, you know, talent acquisition, and that's what it's all about these days, right? And so I know that people are looking towards immigration as a talent acquisition, let's call it an augmentation. Are you seeing from your clients, kind of, you know, see what you're seeing, the trend information, are you seeing more of an interest in immigration to help fill in some of those gaps?
Yeah, certainly. This has definitely become a big talking point with our clients and potential clients lately, especially in light of talent wars for tech talent. Companies are really looking at ways that they can perhaps modify or structure their immigration programs and policies with the goal, the specific goal of retaining and attracting talent.
Fantastic. And, you know, one of the things I always like to articulate when we're talking about immigration is no one's talking about replacing the existing workforce, right? That is not even on the table, right? We're just looking to augment, you know, some of this tech talent. I think you said the right word. They are wars, Lauren. I mean, people are really fighting for tech talent. And historically, you know, immigration and H-1B visas has been a part of that. But it's also part, it's interesting you mentioned the retention part of it, because as we start talking about the changes in green cards and other things, I think that it is retention and just not recruitment. So let's start. Let's dig right into this. Let's start about the let's talk about that retaining the talent part of it and reviewing of their immigration policies and maybe looking at the green card process. What has changed? What are companies doing? What are you advising companies to do? Tell us what's happening, and you're going to get bonus points if you tell us any hacks about how to shorten that process.
Yeah, great question. So from the green card side, and all the tools I think we'll talk about today are going to be useful for tech companies to both retain and attract talent. And specifically with respect to the green card, one trend that we're seeing is companies just being willing to go ahead and get that green card process started right at the beginning after someone onboards with them. Previously, it was much more common for companies to wait 6 months or even a year before starting anything related to a green card case for new employees, right? And this makes sense because, you know, employment-based sponsorship, it's a considerable investment. And the waiting period gives management time to assess performance. They can determine whether that investment is going to be worthwhile. But now with, the competition is so fierce for talent, and tech companies who have really any waiting period before they're willing to start the green card process for new employees, they face a real risk of losing talent to competitors who are agreeing to get this going, you know, right off the bat. We're observing that most of our clients across industries, not even just in tech, they're normally willing to start that lengthy green card process very shortly after onboarding a new employee. And this is certainly a tool for talent attraction and retention.
First of all, I think you do get a point for a hack to do this earlier. And I think you're right. Companies were waiting, right? You don't want to do this for non-performing. But in today's environment, you just simply can't wait. So I think signaling to your employer that you're starting that process early is a big, big signal that you want them to continue in your employment. So that's really good. That's really good advice. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but tell us about processing times. Have they changed? Is it getting better? Is it still the waiting game?
Yeah, the processing times are getting worse, believe it or not. We haven't seen an improvement there. And, that does go back to what I was saying before, too. I think that companies are concluding here because of the processing times, because of the competition for talent, that reasons for, maybe instituting a waiting period or having other types of policies that might delay things are just really outweighed by the advantage of starting right away. And our clients are also reporting that candidates are proactively asking about this during the interviewing process. It shows that they're clearly taking this type of thing into consideration in deciding whether to accept an offer or whether, weighing two offers against each other. And these processing times are just compounding the issue. Staffing issues at the agencies, at USCIS and Department of Labor, they continue to be a problem. It's a leftover thing from some Trump era policies. And also, of course, the pandemic has really slowed things down considerably. So even now we're seeing these long delays. The delays are causing more candidates to ask about this. So we are seeing our clients consistently just being willing to pull the trigger on that and get going with the green cards.
Lauren, do you see those backlogs being less political in nature and more just logistics? You talked about it's funny because we're talking, everyone that has a talent shortage, everyone from Taco Bell to the U.S. government. Does it seem like it's less political and more just logistics and not having enough people to process them?
It's hard to tell, right? The agencies are really opaque in terms of sharing their internal processes and what has been happening. But what we have learned just from our internal sources and things is that there really is a legitimate staffing issue at the government as well. And it was kind of triggered at the outset by, I think, politics, like you said, Trump era policies that were sort of intentionally adding red tape and making things take longer just for political reasons. Now, obviously, I don't think that that's the goal of a Biden era agency. But we are just seeing these lagging delays continue. And the staffing shortage at the government, it's kind of the same as like you said, what we're seeing across industries.
So let's jump into what used to be one of the most stable programs, and that's the H-1B visas for high-tech workers. How are companies kind of leveraging policies around H-1B visas in order to remain competitive? What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, good question and good point. The H-1B is obviously a big talking point. One place where we're seeing companies sort of change their approach is with respect to timing, once again, on prepping cases for the H-1B cap lottery. The cap lottery, it's such a pain point for tech companies. Thankfully, at least the selection rates we're seeing for the most recent fiscal year are a little higher than what we've seen the previous 2 years, but it's still only around 50%. And tech candidates are very aware of this, of course, and it's tied to their ability to continue to live and work in the United States. So what we can't do, obviously, is, increase the selection rate. But companies and their employees, they all want to know if there's a way to maximize chances for selection. Unfortunately, there isn't. The only thing that impacts the likelihood of success there is having a master's degree or not, which isn't really something that, you know, our clients can control. But what companies can do to help with recruiting and retention is ensure that the employee experience through this very stressful process is a positive one. And a great way to do that is to prepare the H-1B CAP petitions in advance of the lottery so that they can file very shortly after the selection happens. And I can provide some context around this recommendation just to kind of point out that the CAP process, it consists first of a registration period that typically takes place in March. And in order to register, the employer provides some relatively basic details about the job, the employee who the company would like to sponsor. USCIS then runs the lottery, and the filing window for those who were selected, it normally opens on April 1st and then closes at the end of June, at least with the first lottery. So there is a 2-month filing window. So in theory, you could wait until after the lottery runs to prep your H-1B CAP petitions and then only prep the cases that were selected. We recommend that our clients have us prepare complete H-1B CAP petitions for their registrants before the lottery even takes place. And this has become really standard in the tech industry. There are a few reasons why we recommend advanced preparation. But the most important one for purposes of our conversation today is that employees are asking for this or even expecting it at this point. They're nervous about the lottery. They want their cases to file right after they're selected. They also want to be able to take their time gathering the documents that they need and working with our office to ensure that any complications with their case are effectively addressed in advance, right? That allows us to file the CAP petitions really shortly after selection takes place. And then USCIS typically approves those cases much more quickly if they're filed in the beginning of the filing window.
You know, Lauren, it's funny that we're talking about a lot of these. You know, you're talking about, I love the way you're framing this is, you know, it's a recruitment and a retention tool. And if the company thinks that you're on top of it, they're going to be much more apt to work for you. And if you're recruiting very senior technical executives that have their choice to work anywhere, that makes a big difference. And you know what I love about, you know, I love having Fragelman on and talking about what they do. And what I like is it never seems like a sales pitch for Fragelman. So I will say something. This is me talking, not Fragelman, but having a top-notch firm on top of it. Fragelman is a global leader in immigration. You should choose Fragelman. But regardless of who you choose, bringing on a top-notch firm is going to show the employee that you're serious about it, that you're taking it serious. It's kind of an obvious question, but do you think having those resources behind, you know, most HR shops aren't prepared to handle a lot of this stuff, and certainly, you know, whether it's Fragelman or someone else, it would seem that having an outside person looking at all the forms and everything would seem to be the prudent thing to do rather than trying to handle everything in-house.
Yeah, thank you so much for the kind words, Kevin. Obviously, really appreciate that. I obviously agree with you that at this point, things have become extremely, extremely complicated with respect to immigration. The way we manage the work with our clients is we like to look at the big picture and sort of manage the client as a program. And obviously, we have a very broad range of clients, so I don't want to make it sound like we only work with very large companies. We do work with individual clients, and we also work with very large companies. But either way, we like to look at the big picture, whether it's a person's individual immigration history or a company's entire program for consistency and, you know, those business related goals that are certainly tied to immigration, particularly with how international the U.S. workforce has really become.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the frustrations in the past, there's a lot of frustrations around H-1B visas, but a couple that I've lobbied against and various firms and entities is, first of all, having the very large IT services firms take up a majority of H-1B visas and not really allowing small mid-sized companies to have the same access to H-1B visas. Do you think that's still, are you still seeing the big IT services firm gobble up a lot of those?
So just by virtue of how many registrations are submitted by a large company versus a small company, percentage wise, they are taking up a lot of the numbers just because of the odds. And I can share that USCIS does run a true lottery. But one of the sort of more creative solutions that we've suggested to some clients to, and this would work for a company that's large or small, that allows people to kind of perhaps bypass the H-1B category altogether. And it's particularly helpful for folks who are working right out of school, whether it's their master's degree or bachelor's, and are relying on an F-1 OPT EAD card. I think that's a really common path in the tech industry is, you know, graduating from school in a STEM field, getting your job using your OPT EAD from that student visa, and then hopefully getting an H-1B. For some folks who are not from the historically very backlogged countries, if companies start the green card process for them while they're still in F-1 status, they may not even need the H-1B, and they may be able to get work authorization quickly enough through the green card process that they can not worry as much if they're selected in the lottery. And, you know, historically, the most common approach, obviously, it's been F-1 to H-1B, then to green card. That path is still a solid path. The going directly to the green card is definitely a more aggressive approach, and there are risks associated with it. So that kind of goes back to what you were saying before, Kevin, about it being really important to have a capable partner advising you with respect to these more aggressive approaches so that both the employee, the manager, and the business are all aware of the risks and okay with those before, you know, going to bat with one of these more aggressive approaches.
Yeah, and I think that was my point. I did put in a pitch for Fragment, but you do, I think you described it correctly. You do need a partner to stay on top of this, because I think most in most HR or talent acquisition execs in small mid-sized companies just aren't domain experts in immigration, and you are. And so I think having that right partner could go a long way. So what about the problem immigration cases that we saw so much of that are kind of stuck due to all long processing times? Is there anything, any solution sets out there, or anything we can could advise companies do to get out of that logjam at all, or is it just that's the way it is?
Yeah, great question. I mean, the processing times at USCIS in particular, it just have become really excessive across the board. It's been really tough on tech companies and their employees. There are all sorts of challenges that arise as a result of this. They can range from someone's inability to renew their driver's license to a complete lapse in work authorization that requires removing employees from payroll or putting them on an unpaid leave of absence, which obviously everyone would like to avoid. So in response to this, we have seen our tech clients sort of throwing their hands up and agreeing to pay for premium processing fees where that is an available option. Premium processing is a service that USCIS offers for some immigration petitions, and it guarantees a response from the agency on the filing within 15 calendar days. Last October, USCIS increased the filing fee from $1,440 to $2,500. That's an almost 75% increase in fees, and even companies who have had progressive pro-employee premium processing approaches, they begin asking us whether there was any way to kind of scale back premium requests in response to that fee increase. And now we've swung right back in the other direction, where because of these long processing times, companies are kind of giving up and they're just agreeing to pay the fees.
Do you have any data on the success rate. So if you didn't go through premium processing, there's a, you know, a rate of declines and accepts. Is there, are you seeing any data? Are there any differences if you pay for the premium processing, or is it just a question of time and the acceptance rate or the decline rate is the same? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, I do. And that's a really terrific point and a great question and something that's super nuanced and it's kind of fluid actually in terms of trends with the agency. So in some situations or at some times in my career, I've seen where it's actually been disadvantageous to file using premium. We'd see maybe a higher request for evidence rate in response to premium requests. Our theory, which is just a theory, is that maybe that officer was really busy and didn't have time to adjudicate the case in the 15 days, so just issued the request for evidence to buy some additional time. But we are not seeing that trend currently. So at this point in time, we're definitely advising clients that the advantages to both the employee and the company of getting their hands on that approval sooner is worthwhile when weighed against a risk of maybe an RFE. And even the RFE cases, we are ultimately normally able to get those approved.
So we've gone through the green cards, we've gone through the H-1B visas, we've gone through the backlog things. What else are we missing that's going on right now that's timely that we haven't already talked about?
Yeah, well, there are those green card categories where premium processing just isn't available. It's not an option. USCIS doesn't accept it for some types of filings. And those can be really, really tricky. This problem, it primarily comes up on the green card side of things. There are some more creative steps that applicants can take in an effort to get their cases moving. And we are certainly seeing employers be supportive of these types of approaches. We're seeing employees agree to cover costs associated with things like perhaps escalating to a congressional representative or the ombudsman's office in situations where there's maybe a true emergency, someone needs to travel or they need to extend their work authorization very urgently. And the green card case has been pending for an egregiously long time. So that's something that typically employers might say, you know, sorry, you're on your own, and have the employee pay out of pocket. We're seeing companies now be more supportive just because of how egregious things have gotten in terms of delays at the agencies.
Yeah, we've heard of that in the marketplace. Lauren, you have given us some hacks. So thank you for that. You know, we're techies, so we love hacks. So, you know, the hacks that I heard from you, you know, on the green card process was start those right immediately as you're onboarding. And on the H-1B visa was a timing issue as well. You know, prepare those in advance to facilitate early filing. And your third hack, as I was hearing, I just want to make sure you guys are recommending the premium processing is not disadvantage, at least now, and the companies that have those resources should go ahead and consider premium processing. Would those be correct?
Yeah, that's a great summary of what we talked about today.
So that's three great hacks. Lauren, I appreciate you talking about it, about immigration. It's funny because we've had much different conversations in the past, right? I've talked to, you know, other folks at Fragment, and they've been these, you know, these political discussions driven by the Trump previous administration political decisions on immigration. And they were very interesting and helped us prepare. But I think this podcast has been a little different in that we've dove in a little bit more than we normally have, and we gave some very specific solution sets. So I wasn't expecting all that. So thank you very much, and thank you for kind of understanding who our audience is and companies that are struggling so much on this talent acquisition and retention, which you pointed out. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. It was such a pleasure. And obviously, we are available if anyone has follow-up questions on any of these strategies that we recommended today. We'd be happy to talk more about those.
I do want to ask questions. So I know, you know, Fragelman is a global firm, and you alluded to something, and I just want to reinforce that. You are accepting clients from small, mid-sized companies. You're not just working for big Fortune 500 companies, correct?
Yes, that's absolutely right. We are structured so that we can provide best-in-class service to all sized clients, from ranging from individuals to large companies as well.
Fantastic. We'll make sure our podcast editor puts in the liner notes about how to get in contact with you and the folks at Fragelman. Let's go ahead and end this Tech San Diego podcast spotlight, and we will see you next time. Lauren, once again, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Since 1994, Tech San Diego has provided a unifying voice for San Diego's technology community, fostering growth and business acceleration through collaborations between industry, education, and government. We support members from all sectors of the technology industry, including cybersecurity, big data, robotics, SaaS, biotech, healthcare, Internet of Things, defense, telecom, and more. Learn more about us at www.techsandiego.org. Tech San Diego would like to thank Lauren Ross from Fragelman for taking the time to talk to us today. Fragelman is a leading firm dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide. Founded in 1951, Fragelman represents a broad range of companies, organizations, and individuals to help facilitate the transfer of employees worldwide. They provide immigration support in more than 170 countries. Learn more about how they can support your hiring efforts at fragelman.com. Producers for Tech San Diego Spotlight are Kevin Carroll and Sarah Spiva. Tech San Diego Spotlight is recorded remotely and edited by Hypable Impact. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, make sure to like, follow, and share.